Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 26. Yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam astiram tatasitoniam yaitad atmaneva vishamnayat yata yata wherever nischalati becomes verily agitated. Manaha, the mind. Chanchalam, flickering. Astiram, unsteady. Tata, tata, from there. Niyamya, regulating. Etat, this. Atmani, in the self. Eva, certainly. Visham, control. Nayet must bring under. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Purport. The nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady, but a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. One who controls the mind and therefore the senses as well is called Goswami or Swami. And one who is controlled by the mind is called Godas, or the servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in the service of Rishikesh, or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses is called Krishna consciousness. That is a way of bringing the senses under full control. But is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice. Ito ni to ni shalati manas chanchalam astiram tatasadomniam yaitat atmaneva vishamnayat. For wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. I think that more than any other chapter that I know of, this chapter seems to go back and forth from perfection to practice. Because in the previous verse we already had the stage of perfection, it's called trance, and it went through the whole experience of being in trance. And before that, it talked about the lamp in the windless place does not waver, etc., and how the yogi is practicing, disciplines his mental activities, becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires, said to be well established in yoga. And before that, there was a whole sequence of how you sit and how you regulate your habits, how your mind becomes controlled, and what the perfection is. And then we go back to beginning, how to engage oneself in the practice of yoga. So now we're back. Not only how you should sit, how you should hold your body, but what is your process to reach that perfection that was already talked about. And here it's has a lot to do with determination. You can reach the stage of the mind doesn't waver like in a windless place. If you develop the proper determination sustained by intelligence, and thus the mind becomes fixed on the self alone, nothing else. And then it talks about here that you can't expect that you're going to sit there on the kusha grass and you're going to simply meditate on Vishnu, and that's the end of the story. You'll immediately have a mind which is like a lamp in a windless place. No, one will have to constantly withdraw the mind back from wherever it's wandering. So that takes a lot of practice. So a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. One who controls the mind, therefore the senses well, is called the Goswami. Now, if you're self-realized, I imagine you must have controlled your mind in order to become self-realized. But obviously, it's not self-realized soul is not the end of the story. Even if you understand that you're eternal, it's not the end of the mind. One has to bring it back constantly under the control of the self, of Krishna. And then, in the transcendental sense, senses are engaged in the service. In transcendental sense happiness, sensors engaged in the service of Rishikesh, for the supreme owner of the senses. In other words, Krishna says, Bhakti mam abhijananti yavanyaschasmi tatvataha tatomam tatvato gyatva vishite tad anantaram. How that only by devotional service can one understand as me as I am, and therefore one can enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So one has to have transcendental love for Krishna in order to understand him. And even the yogi who's constantly trying to bring his mind back under Krishna's control has to do it with a sense of appreciation for Krishna. That it's not simply a mechanical process. If it's a mechanical process, one will not get the transcendental happiness which actually fixes the mind in Krishna's service. Without the higher taste, then one is always subjected to deviation eventually. As we see in the case of Vishwamitra Muni and others who try with great endeavor to fix the mind and for many thousands of years and yet could not actually achieve perfection. I mean, the best Vishwamitra Muni achieved by such an intense endeavor was to become a Brahmin. Which, I mean, he didn't just get a sacred thread. I mean, he actually became a real Brahmin, one who knows Brahman. But because it wasn't based upon love for Krishna, there was an alternative motive. Therefore, it took a long time, and he only reached the degree of perfection. Therefore, a real yogi, he knows the standard of sense happiness in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, although the mind may be distracted by other allurements, because that will be explained later on again, it's not the end of going reviewing the process. It's reviewed from different angles in this chapter. But yoga chalati manasa, that as soon as one tries to become Krishna conscious, then Maya will try and deviate one from by so many different allurements. And the main allurements, of course, are standard allurements, gain and safety. Gain is women and wealth, and safety is protect your women and wealth. The two things that allure one. When you get something you want, then you have to fight to keep it. Because either someone's going to take it away, or you'll lose it somehow. And therefore, the mind, instead of thinking of a Krishna, will think about getting something or losing it. And that's the material energy. First time I heard Prabhupada give a lecture, he said, in the material world, there are only two activities, which makes life simple. Either hankering for what we don't have, or lamenting over what we lost. That was the first lecture I heard Prabhupada directly. So that's our life here in the material world, hankering and lamenting. Hankering for peace and happiness, and lamenting the fact that we can't have it. Or hankering to become the controller and the enjoyer, and lamenting that we can't do it. Or lamenting that we want to be, hankering to become God, and lamenting that we can't be become God. Now, innocently, someone's just hankering to get, you know, some small thing in the material world that's so innocent. The little kitten hankering to get the little mouse. How can it be? But it's, or a little baby hankering to get the candy, or the man hankering to get, you know, the paycheck every week, or whatever. These all seem very normal. And they are normal, but they keep us in the material world also. Only when one can factually understand why we're entangled and therefore make an endeavor to disentangle himself, can one actually make any progress. it doesn't just happen overnight. Even if we try to chant our rounds, we should have some idea what we're doing. Even if we're doing devotional service, we should have some idea how we're entangled. So if we understand how we're entangled, we can disentangle ourselves. Nanyan gunevyas kartaram drashteva nupashanti gunevyas chapram veti madbhavam sodigajati. When you see that there's nothing beyond the three modes of material nature, and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to these modes, then you can know my spiritual nature. So it's not like there's a whole realm of things we're doing which are just innocent and they're actually nice and they should be appreciated, but they have nothing to do with Krishna. And then there's the other thing, when we're actually a little bit in Krishna consciousness, we think we've reached perfection, when actually we're just scratching the surface of what actually Krishna consciousness is. And there's a whole ocean of desires for gain and safety in the material world that we're absorbed in due to the material concept of life. And one has to be patient and gradually disentangle oneself. Otherwise, if one expects that overnight I'm going to disentangle myself from these modes of material nature, and that I don't really have to learn the science, I don't have to make an effort, I don't have to not only just try and fix my mind, but fix it as it says here in the proper consciousness. In spite of whatever material circumstances we may be under, one has to make the endeavor to fix the mind upon Krishna in the proper attitude, in loving service to Krishna. Then one can gradually transcend the modes of material nature. When Krishna sees that we're actually making an effort, despite of any impediments that may be offered, then Krishna will reciprocate with us accordingly. But that takes some time and practice. Not that we sit, we don't do anything, we just let everything happen. But we do with Krishna, the intelligence Krishna gives us, and leave the rest to Him. And at the same time, try to maintain a sense of Krishna consciousness, whatever our situation is. That's one of the main messages in Bhagavad Gita, is that, as Prabhupada writes in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, being transcendentally situated, in the complete stage of Krishna consciousness, the Kshatriya may act as a Brahmin, or Brahmin may act as a Kshatriya. In the transcendental stage, the distinction in the material world do not apply. For example, Vishvamrita was originally a Kshatriya, but later on he acted as a Brahmana. Whereas Parasaram was a Brahmana, but later on he acted as a Kshatriya. Being transcendentally situated, they could do so, but as long as one is on the material platform, he must perform his duties according to the modes of material nature. At the same time, he must have a full sense of Krishna consciousness. So we have to do what we think we're supposed to do, but at the same time we have to cultivate a full sense of Krishna consciousness. So this verse, that we should do our duty, blends into the other important verse that Krishna says, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me. The result is you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. That doesn't negate that we're supposed to do our duty. It means that while we're doing our duty, we should follow that important instruction. And when one becomes perfect in Krishna consciousness, one actually always thinks of Krishna, when it's always Krishna's devotee, when it's always worshiping Krishna, when it's always humble and surrendered to Krishna, and has no interest except for Krishna's service interest, then the result is that one's duty is simply transcendental. But as long as we're not simply transcendental, we still have to do what's necessary. As long as we have a material conception of life, we have to do our duties according to the situation that we're under. Which means, at least in the Krishna consciousness movement, our duties, this movement, is not a material movement, and therefore even the duties we're doing to serve this movement, they're also spiritual and transcendental. They're to help push forward the Krishna consciousness movement. So that's our duty externally, And at the same time, we have to develop a sense of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we won't be interested in pushing forward a movement that we're not actually experiencing. Unless we experience Krishna consciousness, why would we go through the trouble of trying to distribute it? So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
You mentioned that, you quoted Srila Prabhupada from the third chapter, that the Kshatriya can act as a Brahmana, Brahmana can act as a Kshatriya. There are places in the world where any initiative was punished by death. And so therefore...
Any initiative?
Whatever, yes. In enterprise, if you buy and sell something, you'll be thrown in jail or sent to a gulag or...
Oh, you're talking about Russia or something?
One of the places, yes. And it's been going on for a long time.
If you buy or sell anything?
Yes. If you act as a merchant, it's a criminal activity. It was a criminal activity. And punishable. If you owned $1, it was criminally punishable. You would be put in jail. Anyway, I could
say something. Yeah.
What I'm saying that people were actively discouraged from having any kind of enterprising nature, anything different from a Shudra. So how do we help people? Obviously, there's no society without the four types of people.
Yeah.
The proportion may be different. But how do we encourage and people with these different shades of nature, and what?
Oh, we're not so much worried about that. We're worried about people becoming Krishna conscious. So if you're in a situation where you're so restricted, obviously it's not by accident that Krishna put you in that position. But we can see in places like that, people cultivated Krishna consciousness. Actually, they were more affixed in their cultivation because they had less to worry about. Therefore, they actually did amazing service. And when things were less restricted, they became more loose. And their Krishna consciousness, their seriousness about Krishna consciousness proportionally went down with that. So which we consider better? I think a situation where people become serious about Krishna consciousness is probably more auspicious, at least for some time. So we can't judge it. Nothing happens by accident. As far as, you know, our occupational duty is for serving Krishna. In this age, it's the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Now, in order to get food and shelter and have proper relationships, there's the possibility of varna and ashram in some form. But even if you're forced to act as a shudra and you're actually getting your food, and your shelter and all your other necessities, then there's really a very little problem. Because if you want to be creative, then you spend that time, creativity, how to spread Krishna consciousness.
And you'll be guilty of everything, whatever goes wrong. Whatever leader can be found, we'll be blamed for every problem that exists in the world.
What does that mean?
If people are not encouraged to take responsibility for...
Yeah, well, that's... I mean, I can't say what karma. After all, sometimes people in the hellish planets are chanting Hare Krishna too. Sometimes we find that in very... Jadvara was mistreated, but he was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Although he was a Brahmin, he was more than a Brahmin, still he acted as an avaduta, as dumb and deaf. So people didn't disturb him. So, you know, these things, if we have the opportunity, or whatever opportunity we have, we can try to set up the proper society with the proper opportunities. But if it doesn't exist, it doesn't impede Krishna consciousness necessarily. Yes.
Krishna probably doesn't just say things in Bhagavad Gita, but reveals content in a particular pattern which has its purpose to convey as something important. As you've said, that he's going here back and forth from the perfection to the practice, back to the practice. So we could, if you can tell us something more about that.
What he's doing? Well, as I said, he goes through it very quickly from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. You should control your mind. And he begins with, you have to be free from sense gratification. In order to do that, you have to control your mind. And then he says that, you know, the yogi, he tries to do that, control his body, mind, and words, and then he gets to the point where his mind becomes like a lamp in a windless place, and he goes through the whole perfection. What if you actually do it? Now, it's not so easy to do it. So now Krishna goes back, he talks about the determination and the process by which you can come to that platform, having a mind in a windless place. So then he goes through the whole process, and then Arjuna says, well, you know, good enough, there's that process you described, but even I can't execute that process, you know. My mind is so flickering and unsteady. So what do I do? Well, Krishna then goes over two things, the answer to two questions. One is, you know, it's possible, suitable practice and detachment. So you have to follow what I gave you already, if you want to follow that process. And, you know, you have two things. Suitably practice, as I described it, and try to become detached. And then if we do that, then one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work, but who strives by proper means, then he's sure of success. And then Arjuna asks another question, what about the unsuccessful yogi who tried but then he falls down? And then Krishna says, well, he goes to the heavenly planet for some time, or if he's really serious, then he's born into a family of yogis. And if he's not so serious, he goes to the heavenly planets, comes back, and he gets an auspicious birth in a house of mercantile people or Brahmins, where they can take up the process again. And if he's really serious, then he's born into a family of yogis. Now, somehow or another, if he follows sincerely for some time, then when he comes back, he'll be attracted to the yoga principles again. And he'll take it up, and eventually he'll reach perfection. So Krishna has to go over, from different points of view, the yoga practice. So it's not, we see it not only from the external point of view, or even the desire for mental control, but from the point of view of determination and patience, and to come to that perfection. You just don't sit down and, you know, meditate. A lot of challenges are going to be there. Yes?
Could a pure devotee somehow, to some extent, understanding Krishna, guess this sequence or parts of the sequence which you were now explaining? For example, Sanjaya observing this dialogue, do you think he sometimes could?
I'm sure he knows a lot more than I do. You know, after all, Sanjaya was watching the whole thing, listening, and at the end he was in ecstasy. His hairs were standing on remembering Krishna's universal form, and he was taking pleasure remembering it again and again. So I think he's way beyond any explanation I could give. Therefore, we have our commentators, but they don't necessarily touch every point. They give us the opportunity to touch a few points, too. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.